Let your heart be light.
720 WGN. It is Dane here with you until 2. The afterglow of the holiday celebration is happening, but there's no way that the leftovers and maybe whatever else you have in the refrigerator is going to last until New Year's Eve. And that's why we have, and I'm excited to have, the best-selling author, the visionary voice of the wine world, of course, with Bevanars and our consigliere of celebration on with us for New Year's Eve. It's the one and only Mark Goldman. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you, Dane. Great to be back.
It is great to be back. It's one of those things where, you know, when the need is there, like you will step up. The bat signal gets up. You know, Batman doesn't say like, hey, you know, I just did something, you know, with the Joker 2 days ago. He says, where is the need? And I'm in the Batmobile and I'll see you soon. And so you're back here on really what is. This is a worldwide thing. You know, this isn't just America or just isn't one of those other holidays that is important and people celebrate. This is the world. You know, everybody's going to be kind of celebrating and probably drinking something, right? And so it's a big day for you.
And it's a big day. And I like the idea of the bat signal. You know, maybe, you know, instead of a bat, there could be a wine bottle in there just radiating onto the nighttime clouds there.
I think maybe a Bevanars logo would be good, right? With maybe a sponsor mention in the logo too, you know, brought to you by, right? There you go. So think about it. You know, you've been doing this long before Bevanars, yeah. Long before all of that stuff. You've been trying to not only celebrate effectively, but also, you know, yes. Help other people do the same thing.
Totally. I've been celebrating New Year's for a good long time. And yeah, I've been into wine for a good long time. So I do have some ideas on how your listeners could maybe up their celebration quotient without spending too much money.
All right, that sounds good. We have a lot of stores here in the Chicagoland area. Of course, we reach 38 states in Canada here, the greater Midwest at all times. So, but I feel like, and do you like share this, Mark, that there are just the selections that are available to people. It's just, it's increased. Like maybe now, as opposed to 10 years ago, there's just more out there.
So true. And that's an important theme for people to know about, the explosion in choice. And that's why guidance is more important than ever. But you're more likely to go into your local wine store and find something pretty good because so many parts of the world are now competing with each other. So, you know, if you're obviously thinking about bubbly for New Year's and you've got your Prosecco, nothing wrong with Prosecco. It's, in fact, quite affordable and it's fun. Italian. The Italians call it sprezzatura. It's kind of like casual, happy, joyous, nonchalant. So Prosecco is great. Cava from Spain is great. But if you're at all interested in English history or the royal family, English sparkling wine this year has never been more available. And I'm not making a joke. There really is sparkling wine coming from the bottom of England, and it's really good.
Okay, so everyone talks about the terroir and all of the things necessary in order to create great sparkling wine or, of course, you know, champagne in France. Like, what are the necessary elements for people to go ahead and do that? Like you mentioned, you said that I thought you were joking. I thought this was a comedy kind of thing. You know, of course, because you know, England isn't necessarily known for really great food or great, you know, a lot of things on the food or beverage side.
Exactly. I mean, or are you telling me, Mark, this is going to be wine for my fish and chips or wine for my beans on toast? Come on.
Right.
But no, so climate change, one of the positives that's not talked about that much is formerly regions that were too cold, which is the south of England. You know, south of England is somewhat north of Champagne, so it makes sense. With climate change, things are getting warmer. South of England becomes a zone where, exactly to your question, they used to use kind of weird German cold weather grapes like Sylvaner down in the south of England. Now they can use traditional champagne grapes, which your listeners have totally heard about. That's Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier. So one of the keys is it has to be warm enough to grow those traditional champagne grapes. And as of about 15 years ago, it started becoming that. And you got all this talent coming to the south of England. And then they find the exact right patches of land, perfect for growing grapes. You've got those three things together, and they are making champagne. Hopefully no French people are listening, but they're making champagne to rival Champagne France.
Wow. Here's the thing. So we get this here in Chicago. You know, global warming, it's generally a negative thing because it's, you know, it's a apocalyptic kind of element situation for the world, you know, and the humanity and all the other animals, whatever, right? But here in Chicago, global, we could use a little global warming, just a little, right? And you mentioned some of the positives. Not everybody is able to put a positive spin on global warming, but Mark Oldman did. And for the people of England and those who would like maybe a new spin on sparkling wine, they were like, okay, well, this could be good. As a guy, and we'll have pictures up at WGNradio.com, in your wine headquarters, in the Bevanar headquarters at Oldman Tower, right there in downtown Manhattan, you have a globe, right, with little blinking hot spots, you know, as you monitor and manage the wine world. Are there places that have been thought of traditionally as great wine areas that because of global warming, they're struggling?
Well, that's such a good question. Some of the places that started out quite warm, like let's say Spain or Napa Valley, they're not struggling, but they have to be very careful. They have to pick their grapes earlier. They have to perhaps replant higher up the mountain where it's cooler. They have to replant closer to the ocean. All sorts of things you can do to kind of moderate the intense heat effect on grapes. But let's just say it ain't easy. And one of the reasons why, I mean, this is the ultimate proof. And by the way, English sparkling wine isn't sponsoring me or anything. I just find it a really cool thing. But you know, it got the people from Champagne, France's attention. You know that it's happening when Tattinger, the famous Champagne, France wine company, is investing in English sparkling wine vineyards. So they kind of see where their future could be. So some of these traditional regions are saying, you know what, in addition to replanting, in addition to just being careful with the kind of winemaking techniques, what we really need to do is invest in these totally cooler places that are just coming online now. So it's a combination of factors.
As a guy who is not only, you know, here for us on the public-facing side, the consumer side, advocating and educating and all that, but as a guy who knows a lot of the inner industry folks, situations, companies and all that, is this an easy pivot for them? Because so much about the wine world is based on your tradition, you know, is tradition and all of the history and the education, all that kind of stuff. Is Are these companies built, maybe some better so than others, to make that pivot to say, we're going to need to do something different? We see the writing on the wall and we can't just ride this out. Obviously, this is a trend that may be with us where they're able to sort of sustain by getting, you know, just doing different things.
Well, it's true. And the larger companies are the ones kind of benefiting the most because they tend to have the war chest to make these big changes or invest in wineries kind of in far-flung but up-and-coming formerly too cold regions. So it's the small mom-and-pops that they just have to be, you know, they have less kind of ability to change. But even they can, you know, there are ways of vinifying. I won't bore your listeners with it, but there are ways of kind of gaming the system. And in some ways, it helps them too, because if they're picking earlier, nature has less time to ruin the grapes, because sometimes a vintage can be ruined at the last minute. So the longer the grapes are on the vine, the riskier the harvest is. So if you're allowed to pick earlier, that actually has certain kind of optimistic outcomes too. But let's just say it ain't easy for the little guys.
Yeah. You mentioned some of these other words that really mean a similar thing on the tasting experience, whether it's the cava or Prosecco or the champagne. How does that work? And everyone's super protective of what it is that they have, and you can't call it this unless it's grown or made here. Does a company that is a, you know, a legitimate champagne maker in France, if they buy a vineyard in England, do they have sort of that logo or naming provenance to decide, hey, that's still champagne? Or does somebody else, some sort of governing body, step in and say, well, it isn't because it's made here? How does that work?
Dane, you're so good with the questions today. That I've never been asked that, and I think it's a really, really good question. And I could posit to say that they don't put champagne. They're afraid to open that door, the champagne makers in France. They don't want anyone but they using the name champagne. It's got to be in that delimited, very, very bright line bordered region of France. They don't want anyone else or even themselves using that incredibly beautiful and important and a brand excellent name champagne anywhere else. In fact, if you're an American and you have the kind of risk, you want to risk a Frenchman's sang-froid, what you can do is, which wineries in the past have done, is name your bubbly champagne. And the French are going to come after you. I don't know if they can, you know, remember, they aren't the toughest people, but, you know, maybe they can seduce you into, you know, change your mind.
You'll be punished in some alternative, some sort of cool way. Maybe they'll chain smoke next to you, right? Maybe in a negative way, and this will affect your behavior. Who knows? Either way, it's something that we gotta watch out for. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, Mark is gonna have a couple suggestions and maybe some other things, some things you haven't considered that you can incorporate into your New Year's Eve celebration. And we're gonna learn
a great idea for you.
Yeah, and we're gonna learn a little bit about the books. We're gonna learn about Bevanars and also how you can become the next Mark Goldman, if you aspire to do so. So keep it here. It's Dane on 720 WGN.
A bottle of white, a bottle of red, perhaps a bottle of rosé instead.
From England. 720 WGN, it is Dane here with you until 2 p.m. in for John. We're trying to help prepare you with a little bit of lead time to go ahead and get ready for New Year's Eve. You want to be able to get out there, get it before everyone else does, and stock up. And the guy on the line is a best-selling author and, of course, our consigliere of celebration, the one and only Mark Goldman. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you. By the way, I love that moniker. It reminds me of David Lee Roth's old. He used to call himself the Toastmaster of the Immoral Majority or something like that.
We love Dave, right? You know, and you think about it, you know, your titles can be, you know, how people see you and how you assist them and rescue them. And you're doing a little bit of that today here on the show. So for, you know, people are going to go and they're thinking to themselves, well, what am I doing? I was just going to get some Asti Spumante or something like that. Well, you're going to give them just some ideas, right, to think and become the better selves that they want to be heading into 2025.
Absolutely. You know, one of the most fun things I did with wine for New Year's, just reminded of it, is rather than just have one wine and one bubbly, what you could do is a wine and potato chips pairing. So it doesn't have to be that expensive at all. It doesn't have to be expensive. But so, for example, find any bubbly like Prosecco, a Cava, even a nice champagne, and have really salty potato chips with it. Or Sauvignon Blanc, which has a kind of herbal quality, with sour cream and onion. Rosé, mentioned by Billy Joel in the break, and you know, Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. Rosé with jalapeno chips, or something like a red that's bold and smoky with barbecue chips. This will make it, you don't need a lot of people, although if you have a lot of people, it's even more fun. But host a wine and potato chips party. People will love you for it.
Wow. It sounds so, and I'm going to use the word, it sounds so approachable. Right. That is what
exactly.
It is. So one of the things that makes you great, one of the leading voices in this area, in an area that has been over time considered unapproachable and pretentious, is because you've always been excited and passionate about it. So give the listeners, because people are thinking to themselves, like, how does one become Mark Goldman? How did Mark Goldman become Mark Goldman? So talk a little bit about that, whether the wine circle or just a little bit on your journey. Is, you know, obviously you want to be successful in whatever career you have, but you kind of paved your own way.
You know, hopefully if you follow your passions, what do they say? If you're passionate about it, you can get through the low times and everything. Even when you're a wine guy, there are low times. I guess that's when you run out. But That's what, you know, Uber Eats is for, not to give them a plug here. But no, so I was passionate about it, but I ran in college a club that brought in top winemakers from Napa and Sonoma and up from Santa Barbara. And doing 40, 50 of those just taught me by osmosis a lot about wine. So this was at the very beginning. This was, you know, 30 years ago. And then I approached, in my native New York, I approached wine bars and I said, you know, can I teach a beginning wine tasting seminar there? And almost every place turned me down. So that's another nugget, that kind of thicken your skin and get used to rejection. Because most people, if you try to create something where none exists, no opportunity exists, most people are going to turn you down anyway. So all you need is one. And after approaching 10, maybe 12, 13 places, a lovely owner of a wine bar that had an empty cabaret room upstairs, he said, you know what? This sounds, he kind of spoke like a hippie. He's like, this sounds pure. This sounds really pure. I'm going to give you a chance. You teach the wine seminar here. You decide what to teach. I'll provide the wine. Just don't pick anything too expensive and we'll split the profits. And from the first day, in part because I was going around New York taping up flyers on poles, please don't tell the sanitation department. but we were busy from the first day. We had a lot of takers. And I called it the Soho Anti-Snob Wine Seminar because I really wanted people to know it wasn't about snobbery. Now, I'll teach you to be a snob if you really want that. Or I could teach you to be a fake snob, too. But, you know, it's wine doesn't have to be about snobbishness. It's about communion and friendship and breaking the bread and fun.
In the couple of minutes that we've got, in an effort not only initially just a small group of people and kind of sharing the ways of the world and the ways of wine, and then extending it to books, obviously reach a lot more people through the book. And then, of course, with Bevanars, you know, in the minute or two that we've got left, give some information, you know, about that, you know, just Bevanars, how people get involved, the kind of things that they learn through those experiences, and then, of course, where they can go.
Yeah, Bevanars grew out of the pandemic. So basically virtual tastings, you can live anywhere and log in at a fraction of the price of my festival appearances. I mean, 1/100th of the price. And sometimes there's no price at all. Sometimes it's free when I'm interviewing winemakers and so forth. But, you know, everything from Wine 101 to, you know, the best wines under $20 to get the best wines for gift giving or best wines to keep you warm, or my voice cracked on that, best wine for your, you know, going through a second puberty. but you know, it's filled with entertainment and all sorts of practical advice. And you can do it from your bedroom. You can do it from your living room. You can just log in. And the great thing about it is I've teamed with wine.com, and you can buy one of the bottles I'm featuring. You can buy all six. And it makes it this kind of virtual remote experience that's really fun. Invite people over, make it a party. So we're coming out with a billion new Bevanars in January and February, you know, from wines of France to wines of Napa and Sonoma to wines of Bordeaux. And it really will kind of fill in your knowledge gaps, and you'll have a lot of fun doing it too.
We're going to have links up at WGNradio.com, as he has created this educational sort of ecosystem for the wine world, and educating people, paying it forward, so that education is the answer to all of our problems. I'm not sure if it will cure global warming, but we'll at least feel good and have some great things to taste while the world ends. So Mark, thanks so much for everything you're doing. Appreciate it. Again, we're going to have links up. And thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thank you, Dane. It's always a pleasure, and you're a master.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you know, from enjoying the greatest wines from around the world to enjoying the greatest tailgates for maybe the not greatest team,